up, everybody? Dr. Joe Camerata here. Now, before we get into the podcast, I had a simple request, and that is if you like our podcast, go ahead and give us a rating of 5 stars. It will only take you 1 second and will really help to spread the strong word that we are talking about here every week on the Cross Continuum podcast. I know you'll enjoy the podcast, so let's get into it, and thank you very much. What is up, everybody? This is Dr. Joe Camerata with the Cross Continuum, and I wanted to talk about a post that I made on Instagram this week because I feel like there's, you know, a good bit of information that I can pull from it that I just wanted to talk about at length here. And that post was, I'm going to read this off my computer screen right here. I know it feels like you need to see your patients in person to help them towards their goals, but let's go over what that really looks like. And then I list out 5 bullets that really what make up what I would say is, you know, high quality care, high value care. Now, we're in an age where if you look around in the physical therapy community, things are moving online, right? I'm biased in that I have an entire business that is around not only selling education on strength coaching online, but also consulting with small cash physical therapy clinics to help them bring their clinics online in a remote wellness sort of manner. And so in this work that I've done with cash clinics, I've kind of seen this desire to keep one foot in the door, so to speak, or keep, you know, one hand in the pot of in-person care. And that's totally fine. And I want to be very clear that I'm not here to demonize in-person care or to say that it has no place, because it most certainly does. I mean, I was doing in-person care for, you know, 6 years. But now that I've done basically since last August, remote coaching with, you know, a pretty large number of athletes at this point, I've seen what it can really do. And I wanted to communicate those things and the vehicle that providing care remotely can be. But again, I'm not here to say that there's no place for in-person care, but it's certainly not the end all be all. And I don't think that it deserves as much hype, I guess, as it gets from some of the people that I work with, you know, and some of the people that I work with are used to one thing, which is probably why they hire me, because they want to see what else is out there. They want to expand their business offerings. They want to bring more value to their clients. And so as I've stepped deep into the remote care, into the remote coaching world, there's been like these 5 kind of tenets that I followed that seems to basically work pretty well as far as getting folks to where they're trying to go. And now none of these are going to be shocking or surprising to anybody who is in the physical therapy space. And I think that they will all sound very familiar. And so I'm just going to rattle them off and then I'll go through them one by one. So I know it feels like you need to see your patients in person to help them towards their goals, but let's go over what that really looks like. Good communication, building rapport, shared decision-making, person-centered care, and a goal-oriented plan of care. And I end the post with the question of, what part of this needs to happen in person? You know, there was a comment that said, I'd go as far to say that I can do these things to a greater magnitude online than in person, simply because it allows for more frequent communication than just on follow-ups. And I honestly would totally agree with that. And to linger on that for a little bit, to pull on that thread for just a moment more, I think that most of the physical therapists that get into physical therapy end up working somewhere where this is unfortunately true, where they think that they're going to be seeing one person at a time, or, you know, maybe even 2 people at a time, or they will have the opportunity to spend more time with the people that are there, but not too much time, because, you know, we want to discharge people when it's appropriate, and we want to move them out as quickly as we really can, because we don't want to expose them to the medical field more than they really need to be. But as we get into physical therapy and as we work in clinics, outpatient clinics, inpatient clinics, what have you, out of network, in network, they're all the same. They all end up making the realization or helping us realize that we just don't get as much time as we would want or need with patients for the most part, right? There's unfortunate insurance dictations that happen that where you can't treat this person with this intervention, or you can't treat these two people at the same time. You have to spend time with this person and that person, you know, alone. And not only that, but then there's a bottom line, you know, and I'm not ignoring the fact that these are businesses, and there's a whole side of healthcare that revolves around keeping the lights on so that we can help people as much as possible. But when you get into it, you still kind of recognize that there is this occurrence that happens where you get somebody, you do their evaluation, you create a plan of care for them. And then at least in the world that I was in, which is the military world, you basically hand them off to a PTA or a PT tech, and then they go off into the ether for 4 weeks. And now I know that I've also worked in outpatient clinics that weren't involved in the military. And while there is a little bit more contact, you know, you do an eval and then you say, all right, you're going to come in 2 times a week, 3 times a week for the next 6 weeks at minimum, before we even think about discharging you. And, you know, you see them those 2 times a week and you do your 10 or 16, your 8 or 16 minutes of manual therapy on them. And then they go off with the tech, all after, you know, doing 8 minutes on the upper bike ergometer or the bike. And then there's not really a whole lot of exchanging that happens in the world of, you know, building rapport and shared decision-making and those sorts of things. And it gets away from us a little bit. You know, a lot of the reasons that folks move away from that space and into, you know, either the cash space or the military space or the remote space is because it just gets away from you. You know, the patients pile up and the documentation piles up and you're kind of running around and the billing department tells you that you have to write notes while you're seeing people. You can't save them to the end of the day because you don't get any admin time, whatever. And so a lot of folks are either opening their own practices so that they can build more time in, or they're opening cash practices so that they can charge a premium so they don't need to see that many patients, or they're going somewhere like I did to the military, which doesn't exactly ameliorate or solve the problem of spending time with people. But that's kind of like the reasoning behind this post, was just that when I do start to work with folks in the cash practices, there's this kind of need to hang on to them in person. There's this need to over deliver. There's this, what we probably call a commission bias, where this person is paying me a lot of money, and so I need to give them a lot of stuff so that that money is justified. Right, I don't feel like I'm stealing from there or anything like that. But what ends up happening is that when I come in and I say, hey, we can, you know, move these folks to remote management and provide even more value to them than you are currently, there's a little bit of pushback, you know, because as somebody who saw this get away from them, where the patients were being sent out and they weren't talking to them for a long time, or you know, they didn't have a whole lot of follow-ups for 4 or 6 or 8 weeks or so. They want to kind of hold on to them. And these five things that I laid out are kind of what I would say make or contribute to being a quote-unquote good therapist or a high-value therapist. Now, there's, you know, plenty of discussion about the hard skills or, you know, the objective measures that you would do or the things that you would need in person. But my argument is always that these soft skills, as we call them, which are, you know, it's cliche to call them soft skills anymore because they're the most difficult part of physical therapy, but these soft skills can happen in any form, right? Good communication. What does that look like? How do we apply things like motivational interviewing, like active listening, like, you know, epistemic questioning? How does that need to happen in person? And how can we do that remotely, right? If you're a good communicator, if you're taking notes and asking open-ended questions when needed and pointed questions when needed, and building rapport with these people, you know, asking them what they like to do and what their family structure looks like, and really getting to know them, none of that needs to happen in person at all. I mean, I can confidently say that good communication and rapport are like the top two things that we need to be doing when it comes to appropriately interacting with patients so that they turn out in our favor, or how we kind of hope that they turn out. You know, building rapport comes from just getting to know somebody, being their friend, figuring out what makes them tick, doing that kind of questioning of, why are you here? What are you afraid of? What do we need to get back to, and why? And that all comes from mixing these two, good communication and building rapport. And then we get to something like shared decision-making, right? Which I think is a little bit lower on the rung of things that are important after good communication and building rapport. Because, you know, I've been critical about shared decision-making in the past, where my main gripe was always, like, the patient doesn't know what the heck is a good idea or not. If they did, then they probably wouldn't be in front of you. And, you know, we can't just do whatever the patient wants. That's not how this works. But there is an argument for shared decision making. You know, we present with options that, based on our musculoskeletal expertise, seem like good ideas at the time based on whatever they're presenting with. And then we talk with the patient to figure out which one sounds best to them. Again, something that doesn't need to happen in person. We have person-centered care, right? We're not treating this person like a machine. We're not focusing on how we get their knee better. We're focusing on how we get them better. We're focusing on maybe the deficits that they have socially, culturally, in their family, that are being kind of highlighted with these symptoms or with whatever is going on. You know, it doesn't take somebody sitting in front of you to create a person-centered plan of care. And then, of course, a goal-oriented plan of care, right? I mean, we all learn how to write a SOAP note. We all learn how to write SMART goals. Although, if pressed, I don't think I could list out what SMART even stands for anymore. Anyway. But we ask this person where they're going, where they want to go, and try and figure out how we can get there, and then create a plan of care that is oriented towards that goal. And so all of these things happen actively while I'm managing athletes, right? We write a program around whatever problem they're having with whatever equipment they have available. We communicate very regularly, and to the point of this comment that was made, that I can do these things to a greater magnitude online than in person, I would totally agree. You know, if somebody goes out for 4 weeks in a regular clinic and there's no, I don't know, technology between you and their plan of care other than the printout that you give them from HEP to go, then there's not really this emerging strategy that can happen where we can alter the plan of care based on the emergence of their response to that stimuli. You know, if they have a bad time with the plan of care that we made, that's 3.5 more weeks until we find that out, only to find out that they haven't been doing any of it for 3.5 weeks because it just didn't work well. And then we have, you know, things like in-app communication, things like TrueCoach or EverFit or whatever other, you know, online delivery exercise portal that you use. There's a DMing, a private messaging platform where somebody can say, hey, this movement stunk and I don't like it and I'm not going to do it. And as a coach, you go, okay, sweet, let's do this one instead. And while they're in the gym complaining about it, they can change it. And again, can't happen in person. You know, shared decision making. We can alter things quickly, rapidly, and frequently if needed from the remote aspect. And, you know, I don't care to get into a conversation about, at least not in this podcast, about, you know, the the art of hands-on care, right? I feel like I could talk for days about hands-on care and its place in rehab and things like that. And yes, there is a place for it. And if that means that that person needs to come in or else they're not going to get better, you know, we can have a conversation about that. Maybe they're post-surgical. Maybe there's something tangible that needs to happen in person that can't happen remotely. But to the providers who feel that people have to come in, my question is why? You know, there's a conversation about, you know, people like to be touched, or they like to know that we're examining the area well, or they like to XYZ. But we could also communicate trust, rapport, and examination remotely, right? I mean, I read 3 papers on telehealth this week about how the outcomes are similar between folks that are getting in-person care and folks that are not. Now, there's a little bit of difference between the short and long-term outcomes there, which might be a design flaw. But again, the fact remains that the things that push people towards getting better, the things on this list, good communication, good rapport, shared decision-making, person-centered care, and goal-oriented plans of care, all that takes is talking. All that takes is interacting with somebody verbally. Somebody can post videos online and show that things are hunky-dory, or that they're moving well or they're not moving well, whatever that means. And you can be in person and you can likely give some pretty decent cues, and you might be able to make changes more rapidly in person than you would remotely. But for some people, that's not the case either. And so my question is always, like, why are we holding on? Why are we not embracing this remote aspect that can be a great, not only tool, but addition to in-person care, right? A lot of the folks that we end up seeing end up getting better no matter what, unless you're making them worse. And if you have patients that aren't getting better, maybe reflect on that. But most of the folks that we see are going to get better, right? Natural history, they regress to the mean. If they're in an acute stage, they're probably going to get better on a pretty rapid basis, unless you fill their head with gobbledygook. And so with that being said, the path forward when it comes to remote care looks very similar to in-person care, right? We do an evaluation, we do an examination, we talk to them, we get their, you know, patient interview or their patient history, everything that's pertinent to whatever's going on. We can visualize over Zoom or over video what's happening. And then we can make a plan of care and implement that plan of care. The difference is that if you have the availability, or if you have the lack of availability to see them on a regular and frequent basis, then you don't really know if things are going in the direction that you want until they are going in the wrong direction for a long time and they come back saying, this is worse, or this isn't any better, or what have you. And so that's it. That's just, you know, the question is always, why do they need to be in person? For a long time, at least, you know, at some point, I think that most physical therapists can recognize that somebody's done with physical therapy, that they don't need it anymore. And then they become a good candidate for remote training, right? You know, I don't have to beat a dead horse when it comes to the physical activity guidelines and the lack of people doing it. But if you feel like you're a fixer, or an operator, as Jason Silvernell might say, an operator versus an interactor, ask yourself, what can you take away and they can still get better? Or what happens if you took everything away and just talked to them and just gave them exercise? Would they get better? And if you think not, then I would ask, why do you think that? And that's all I got. This was drawn out, but I think necessary. And it's been weighing on my mind lately. So if anybody has any questions, rebuttals, or points that they want to discuss, I believe there's a poll section or a question section at the bottom on Spotify, at least. But you can also just reach out to me on Instagram or email me. I hope you guys are having a great holiday season. And thanks for sticking with me.
Shut up!